Support for Iditapod, a production of Alaska Public Media, comes from MVFCU. Experience the MVFCU way.
I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you for the team. Support
me.
And
what I do.
And I love every single one of you, so thank you very much.
Welcome to the Iditapod, a podcast about the Iditarod, and thanking you for your support. I'm your host, Casey Grove. Before we get too mushy, here's a word from our sponsor.
Support for Iditapod comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, taking pride in its strong ties to Alaska's communities.
It has happened, because Paige Drobny made it happen. The top 10 of the Iditarod includes three women for the first time ever. More on that coming right up. Bethel's Pete Kaiser won the 1,000-mile race early Wednesday. We covered that in the last episode. If you haven't heard, maybe you should go back and listen to it. Kaiser was followed into Nome by defending champ and second-place finisher Your Life Seth Olsom and Jesse Royer in third. Rounding out the top 10, all into Nome as of Thursday morning are Ali Zirkel in fourth, Travis Beals in fifth, Matt Hall in sixth, Paige Drobny, like I said, in 7th, Ramey Smith in 8th, Mitch Seavey in 9th, and Aaron Burmeister in 10th, coming on home to Nome. And let's just take a quick look at the rest of the field out to the top 20. Richie Deal, also into Nome in 11th, 12th place, went to Linwood Fiedler, survived, and made it to Nome. He's in 12th. Jeff King in 13th, Wade Mars in 14th, and then in 15th, out of White Mountain is Jeff Dieter, 16th and 17th, Anna Barrington and Christy Barrington, Seth Barnes out of White Mountain in 18th position, and Mats Pedersen out of White Mountain in 19th, and in 20th place, Matt Fahler getting ready to leave White Mountain as I am recording this. The top rookie in the race at the moment is still Richie Beattie in 22nd, followed by Ed Hopkins in 23rd, and as we had guessed, perhaps something we should have put a big bet on, this year's Iditarod has seen more women earn top 10 finishes than any other. Some of those mushers are household names for even casual sled dog racing fans, names like Zirkel and Royer. They've been in the top 10 together a bunch of times. I broke that down in episode 13, maybe check that out. But for Paige Drobny, who, side note, lives in my old hometown of Esther down a long road that my best friend used to live on, she shot up the rankings and into the top 10. That is beyond a major accomplishment. She's been a good musher for a while, but she has my vote for most improved in this year's Iditarod. Anyway, our trail reporter, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes, talked to Jesse Royer, talked to Ali Zirkel, talked to Paige Drobny, all in Nome. He has more on what's now a trio of elite long-distance women mushers.
Welcome to Nome.
Hi, Jesse.
Arriving in third place Wednesday morning, Jesse Royer explained she did not have an easy time on the last leg of the 1,000-mile race.
It's been a whiteout, like probably 4 to 12-inch drifts for the whole last 50 miles. Just solid drifts.
A lot of this year's trail has been a slog, with open water, snowless stretches of tundra, and warm, wet weather. The final push from White Mountain to Nome was equally grueling.
Of course, this last part, I don't think I've ever gone so slow for so long, so I'm very happy to be here. But it's just the trail conditions. I kept hoping we would get a break, but no, it just kept getting worse and blowing more, and it's just a really fine snow, and you can see my sled and everything is just plastered with snow, and we didn't get a break the whole way in, but we made it, so we did good.
Royer's name is familiar at the top of the race standings. She's placed as high as fourth in the past. This year, she spent most of the race in the frontmost chase pack, at times running side by side with Pete Kaiser and Yor Olsom, who took first and second place. That was not the case for Ali Zirkel. The three-time runner-up took a gamble this year, pushing her team all the way to the Iditarod checkpoint to take her 24-hour rest. It was a long, arduous run that Zirkel says didn't exactly pay off.
I think I wound up exactly where I might have been if I had played the safe card, but it would have been a lot less work.
Zirkel says that even though her team thrives in difficult conditions, this year's trail pushed the limit.
It was a good race. It was, as I mentioned, I do better when it's challenging, and oh my goodness. So blizzards and swimming on the Yukon and wind and, I don't know, endless. My feet have not been dry for 10 days, so I'd like to thank the PA in Uniclete who came and gave me some first aid.
She says there's no major problem with her feet, just a bit of fungus. A perennial fan favorite, Circle got a boisterous reception when she arrived fourth in Denome on Wednesday afternoon, with fans lined up and down the race chute cheering for her. She bounced between reporters, her dogs, her husband, race officials, and a crowd of kids who wanted her to sign their arms with a marker. Jesse Royer was also in the chute to congratulate her and compare notes.
Did you like all them 50 miles of drifts? Were you like a snow globe like
no,
I was?
No, my trail was perfect.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for putting it in.
I put it in for you.
No, it was great.
It was like a snow globe
there
for 50
no
miles.
There were no issues. There were no issues. I found the trail, never got lost.
Isn't that why you let her go in front of you?
Yeah, I let her.
Yeah. She let you?
She's so kind.
Conditions along the coast have stretched out what's usually a rapid tempo between front pack mushers. Hours passed before Paige Drobny arrived in seventh place around sunset, just minutes behind fellow Yukon Quest musher Matt Hall. Drobny is the third woman in the top 10, something that has never happened before in the Iditarod.
This trail was just wet and warm and soggy.
This is by far Drobny's best finish in the Iditarod. She's never before placed in the top 20, let alone the top 10. She attributes the improvement to coming off the Quest just weeks ago and the development of her dog team.
I think for our kennel is just that much older than the last time I was here. And then this year I ran the Copper Basin, the Quest, and this with basically the same team. And having that relationship with that set of dogs was a big key to the success too.
17 of the 52 mushers who started this Iditarod are women, a larger share than any other year, though not the most to have competed in a given race. Drobny says she hopes the strong showing will inspire more women.
Women can do anything that men can do, and dog mushing is a sport that we can all enjoy, and it's all about the dogs, so I'm happy to be here with my team.
The 47th Iditarod concludes with a banquet on Sunday. In Nome, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Ah, the banquet. Never been. You can be sure there will be huge applause for Royer, Zirkle, and Drobny, as well as, of course, Pete Kaiser after his first Iditarod win. That pride stretches all the way down to Kaiser's hometown in Bethel and really all of Alaska, but especially anywhere off the road system like that, places where dog mushing was really developed long before there were roads. KYUK, the radio station based in Bethel, broadcasting in the Yukon-Kuskokwim region, reports that fans in Kaiser's hometown were thrilled, maybe a little exhausted, after staying up to watch and cheer Pete's historic win. Here is a piece from KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur with just some of Kaiser's fans in Bethel.
I was just listening to the news, I was holding my breath, and I was telling myself, why am I wanting to cry? I'm so excited.
Me and my wife stayed up and watched him finish, and there was tears of joy.
It's an awesome sight to see.
God, I'm so proud of him.
It's about time somebody went from Kuskokwim.
And for him to be from Bethel, to be local, to be Yupik.
Someone in our town representing Bethel, the Kuskokwim, Southwest Alaska. Just
hometown boy. And
he represents what good we can accomplish.
Hopefully it'll inspire other kids to look into joining mushing.
But she built.
We should just do a parade.
Wonderful feeling knowing someone that you know, someone from your hometown, is the best musher in the world.
You just heard from Deborah Sampson, Yvonne Waska, Tootsie Gwynn, Nelson Alexi, and Tommy Bayaoke in 2019 Iditarod champion Peter Kaiser's hometown of Bethel. Great to hear from those folks. This race really connects these different communities all across Alaska, which is massive if you haven't heard, in a way that not many things can. It has also connected a lot of Iditarod fans from way outside Alaska to very specific individual villages. I talked to our contributor Quince Mountain, husband of Iditarod rookie Blair Braverman, a while back. And Quince is still snow machining down the trail. He's caught up quite a bit, but this interview is from a few days ago, so apologies for the lateness, but the fundraising amounts we mentioned have probably grown since then. We started off talking a little about Quince's journey, but quickly got to what's turned into hashtag IGiveARod.
It's a different number. Don't know if it's gonna work.
Let's find out. Will we get a Quince calling Quince Mountain? Oh, it's ringing. It's ringing.
Hello.
Hello, is this Quince Mountain?
Yeah, it is. Is this Casey Grove?
That is I.
Yeah, wow. Quite a trail out there, Casey. Yeah. Let me tell you, I'm learning to value the dog team even more than I already do. The dog will get through anything, whereas traveling with the snow machine, I mean, it's good, but it can feel like kind of a 800-pound brick, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm meeting some amazing people on the trail. We came up to Nikolai and, you know, heard that people online on Twitter who are watching the race have donated more than $7,000 to help fund the fourth grade class trip to Anchorage in April. So that's amazing. They went from having very little money to being fully funded and then some. So yeah, that was one of the coolest things to have happen.
Tell me more about this. It's a lot of sort of the Ugly Dogs crew that's been following along the race, and we definitely appreciate having their ears as we're putting this podcast out. And I just wondered, how did this all come together? How much do you know about that?
The fundraising for the schools? Yeah. I had no idea. I mean, I went into Nikolai, and we're just sort of, you know, that's how it works. You go to these villages, there is no hotel or something like that. So here we are, these weary snow machiners coming into a village, and, you know, we just sometimes have to knock on the door of the school principal and see if they'll open up the school or, mm-hmm. or the town, you know, the village building. And, you know, these communities are used to that, so they'll often do that, you know, for a fee, and that's kind of how they recoup some of their costs for heating those buildings for the village. In this case, you know, the kind of bleary-eyed principal is around 8:39 at night, and she said, oh yeah, you know, the race just came through. And then I said, oh yeah, my wife was in there, Blair Braverman, and she just kind of lit up, and she said, your wife has some amazing fans. And I thought, great, you know, maybe they wrote an email or something or sent some mushrograms. And she said, they have funded our school's our class trip. And I mean, I was blown away. I was so proud. And you know, she was nearly maybe teary-eyed, or maybe just, you know, she just had a real joy and gratitude for what people have done. And I've heard that people, Ugly Dogs, have kind of like really started making spreadsheets and have raised over $20,000 for these village schools along the trail, which is really what this race is about, connecting these communities that are off the road system throughout Alaska that there aren't other ways to get to. You either have to fly, snow machine, or, you know, the traditional method of dog team, which I'm coming to believe is the most reliable.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And I guess, you know, I had received an email about this, and I wasn't sure how much of an organized effort this was, but they're using the hashtag IGiveARod on Twitter. So for anybody that wants to find out more about that, it's hashtag IGiveARod.
Nikolai closed their GoFundMe. She was hoping to raise, you know, a few hundred dollars with this GoFundMe that an ugly dog named Shannon suggested setting up, and, you know, it exceeded $7,000. I mean, it fully funded the trip and then some in less than 24 hours, and she closed it. I mean, the principal was just blown away.
Nikolai, such a cool place too. I remember being in the school there and just how polite all the kids were there, and they were all selling food, you know, like grilled cheese sandwiches and stuff like that, and they were just very nice, everybody there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, stay safe out there. And we, you know, we'll be thinking about you snow machining out there in the dark. So yeah, again, be safe.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And yeah, if you don't hear from me in a few days, well, I don't know. I have a nice life.
Okay.
Yeah. Light a little candle for us, you know, to light a little candle to Our Lady of Bungees.
Okay.
Who has...
Okay.
Scattered bungees along the trail just where we need them.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Casey. It's so good to hear from you.
You too, man.
All right. Take care.
So excellent to have Quince with us on the podcast this year. Like I said, he has made it a lot farther down the trail than that last time that we talked. To find out more about his journey, you can find him on Twitter simply Quince Mountain, twitter.com/Quince Mountain. It has also been so nice to hear all the different voices of the Iditarod, from the mushers to the fans, and definitely all of you out there listening who have sent us your recorded questions. There were so many great questions, and we're sorry we weren't able to answer them all, but we really enjoyed getting them. I thought maybe we could charge through a few of them right now in a lightning round of Iditarod questions. Are you ready? I am. Here we go.
Hey, you guys. This is Morten Sandvik calling from Norway. I'm listening to you on my way to work. Thanks for a good show. And my... G! Tuak! Ja, flinket, flinket! G! Ja, bra! Sorry about that. My question is, how many listeners do you have from Norway? How many of us are there? Thank you. Happy trails.
To answer your question, we have something like 2,000 unique downloads that came from Norway. As far as I can tell, our stats aren't super deep, and they don't tell us which user that was or anything like that. So all 2,000 of those might just be you, Martin. Here's our next question.
You guys are doing a great job with the Iditarod this year. We're especially enjoying the extra interviews that you guys are putting together. This is Zach, your dad, Papa Kirk, down here in Fort Lauderdale, thinking of you guys on the trail. And my question for today is just exactly what went down in that sauna the other night. Sounds like there were conversations upon conversations. It was great to hear that boozer interview, and we're all sort of sitting here holding our breaths for Nick Petit and the gang. Keep up the good work, guys.
Well, Kirk, good to hear from you again, but I don't know if you heard, Nick Petit actually had to scratch. Yeah, it's kind of sad. And also, his name is Nick Petit, not Petit, even though Jim Lanier, his old friend, calls him that. To answer your question, what happens in Unalakleet stays in Unalakleet. That is all. Next question.
Hello, my name is Daisy, and I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. And my question is, which musher are you most surprised to see at the front of the pack?
Hey, Daisy. Well, I don't know if I would say I'm surprised to see her so far up at the front of the pack, but definitely Paige Drobny, who we just talked about. She had never finished even in the top 20, and she came in 7th place this year. I don't know that I'm surprised, because she and her husband Cody Straith have been raising these dogs and getting better and better every year. But it's definitely a huge leap to go from the mid-20s and below to all the way up in the top 10. I think she really ran a great race, too. It's not just some fluke that she ended up there. She had great dogs, she had a good strategy, and she hung on to make it happen. I'm not maybe the most surprised by her, but I'm probably the most impressed by Paige Drobny. Next question.
Hi, Iditarod. This is Jean in Chicago. So you've talked about what happens when a dog is injured or sick, but after they've dropped a dog off at a checkpoint, do they ever get to add back dogs to the team? I don't know if the logistics of that would even be possible, but if 14 dogs is already less than normal, does losing more dogs from that seriously affect your ability to race? Is there a number you could reach where you'd be required to scratch? I see that Kaiser has 8 dogs running right now, and he's in the lead. What's the smallest number of dogs someone's finished the race with? Thanks. Love the show.
Hello, Gene from Chicago, and go Cubs. The answer is no, you can't add dogs back into the team. When they have to be dropped at a checkpoint, the dogs eventually get flown either to Nome or to Anchorage to meet up with the team at some point later. And I just have to say, the mushers that I've seen that interact with the vets in the different checkpoints, those vets checking all the dogs, regardless of whether the musher wants to just continue through the checkpoint or not. And definitely when the mushers stay in the checkpoints, they have those veterinarians that they can talk to and kind of get some advice on how to treat things, or maybe if they should drop a dog. That conversation, I have never seen a musher argue with a vet. It's usually a suggestion from the vet or a discussion that they have where they reach the conclusion that they need to drop a dog. And a lot of times, of course, the musher just makes that determination on their own. It can kind of create a logistical challenge, and that's part of the reason why the Iditarod went from 16 dogs to 14 dogs max, because all of those dogs, remember, there were 52 teams that started this race. Every single one of those teams could have started with as many as 14 dogs. You can do the math. I can't. But when you have that many dogs traveling down the trail and dogs getting dropped in these little tiny checkpoints that are just villages, some places just ghost towns that are set up to be a checkpoint just for the Iditarod, it can be kind of tough to get those dogs out in a timely manner. And definitely there's a huge effort to make sure that those dogs are taken care of. To answer the second part of your question, the minimum number of dogs now is 5. You have to have at least 5 dogs in your team. That may seem like a very small number when you think about them starting with 14, but it's doable. You might lose a lot of speed in terms of how fast your sled can travel if you've dropped all those dogs down to 5, but you do make up time in terms of how much time you spend taking care of the dogs and feeding them and taking on and off booties. Because, of course, if you have fewer dogs, you have to do fewer booties, fewer meals. I believe the limit used to be 6, and I think they changed it to 5 this year because, of course, they reduced the number of dogs you can have in your team from 16 to 14. There have been teams that finish with 6 dogs. Usually they don't do that for a huge stretch at the end of the race. It'll usually kind of be like right at the end that they kind of get down to that many. But I don't believe at this point that anybody's finished with as few as 5, since that's a relatively new rule. Next.
Hi, my name is Christina. I'm calling in from Germany. I'm super new to the Iditarod and just recently joined the Ugly Dogs on Twitter. And my question might be fitting for the race that is coming to an end. So I see a lot of pictures of stuff getting just dropped to the ground and hearing plastic crinkle in your Iditarod podcast. So my question is, who's cleaning up after such large races? Thanks and bye.
Hey, Christina from Germany. That is a great question. Because the race rules require mushers to complete the Iditarod without any outside help, and because cleaning up after yourself is part of running the race, really the musher is the one that's supposed to clean all that up. You might see them drop some things in checkpoints, but generally by the end of their visit in the checkpoint, they have cleaned things up and shoved them back into their empty drop bags to be disposed of by folks there in the Iditarod, the volunteers that are taking care of the checkpoint. In reality, sometimes things do get away. You've got a bunch of mushers out there scrambling, trying to get through their gear, and things do blow away with the wind. There's also a lot of dog straw. That's what they put down on the snow for their dogs to sleep in, and the dogs love it. Then they spread that straw out. But of course, that's tough to clean up. There's, frankly, some dog urine, sometimes some dog feces that end up in that straw. And they'll clean that up as best as they can, but you know, it's straw. It's stuck to the snow. It doesn't exactly just go away that easily. I skied just the other day. I skied up to the end of the ceremonial start trail in Anchorage, that part of the trail that just goes through Anchorage and ends out at Campbell Airstrip. And some mushers had put straw down out there for the dogs just at the end of that sort of that first ceremonial part of the Iditarod that doesn't actually count towards their race time. And even, you know, over a week later, there's still some pieces of straw out there that the very same dogs that are coming into Nome now had been resting on here in Anchorage just over a week ago. Definitely out in these checkpoints, the mushers try to clean up after themselves as much as they can, and the Iditarod volunteers will step in and help with that too, and hopefully not leave too much of a mess as this huge sort of circus just passes through along the trail. Anyway, everybody, thank you for all the great questions. Sticking with Germany, our former colleague and current friend, Rachel Waldholz, is living in Germany right now, speaking German even, at least that's what we've been told. She sent Zach, our other trail reporter and current friend, KNOM's Ben Matheson, and I, a link to a German newspaper article about the Iditarod, so we decided to call her up and make her read it to us. Hello?
Hey!
Hey!
Can you hear me?
Yeah, it worked.
That's amazing. You want to know how to say sled dog race auf Deutsch? Hundeschlittenrennen. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Does that actually like mean something else and somebody told you that that's what it is? Or is that from the newspaper article?
It's from the newspaper article.
It's not just some cuss word or something in German?
I mean, that's entirely possible. That's always possible when it's German.
Rachel, can you read this German newspaper article and tell me what newspaper is this even from?
Well, Well, this is from Der Spiegel. It's from Spiegel Online, which is a big magazine here in Germany. And I just want the listeners to know that I am doing this under protest because my German is terrible. So as long as we have that disclaimer in there.
Disclaimer noted.
All right. You want me to read this to you?
I want you to read this to me in German so I can get the full effect of this article.
All right. Here's the headline. It's dramatic. Ein Mann, acht Hunde, 1600 Kilometer, Deutsch, Alaska. Neun Tage Wildnis. Der Iditarod stellt Mensch und Tier auf die Probe. Das längste Hundeschlittenrennen der Welt hat dieses Jahr ein Mann aus Alaska gewonnen. Der US-Amerikaner Peter Kaiser hat den Iditarod, das längste Hundeschlittenrennen der Welt, gewonnen. 9 Tage, 12 Stunden und 39 Minuten nach dem Start in Anchorage erreichte der 31-Jährige aus Alaska mit seinen Hunden das Ziel, die Stadt Nome an der Bering Sea, 1600 Kilometer entfernt vom Startpunkt. That's the first pair.
That was great. I love how you did that with such enthusiasm, and like your accent on the German words kind of goes away when you say Alaska or Iditarod. It's so authentic.
Yeah, authentic is, I'm sure, what all of your German listeners are thinking.
maybe Christina will let us know how the pronunciations were there. When did you see this, and what did you think when you saw them writing about the Iditarod in Der Spiegel?
Well, it's funny because yesterday when I was about to go to lunch, actually, it was when the Iditarod was finishing in Alaska. And so I had ADN's Tegan Hanlon was live streaming it. And so I had the live stream on Facebook up on my computer, and I was trying to get all of my German colleagues interested. And they were like, what is the Iditarod? And then came in today, and one of my colleagues was so excited. He was like, I have something for you. You're gonna love it. And he sent me the link to Der Spiegel article, and you open it up, and there's, you know, right there in the top paragraph, Pete Kaiser from Bethel, Alaska, right here in this German paper. And I just loved it. I just was like imagining being in Bethel when I visited, you know, like being in KYUK and just thinking how far away that is from Berlin. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's great to hear your voice. It was just lovely talking to you.
Yeah, this is fun. You know, let me know when you need me to read more German on the radio.
Okay, I will dial you up on the Skype.com. Everybody, give it up for Rachel Waldholz. Thanks for that.
Yeah, no problem, Casey.
Rachel did some top-notch work with part of our team here at Alaska Public Media. That's called Alaska's Energy Desk. She and our other great colleagues here put together a couple different podcasts. We're just one of the many. One is Midnight Oil, which looked at all the impacts of developing oil in Alaska, as well as the impact of climate warming on the state. And the other is Paying Dividends. That's pretty new. It explores Alaska's wacky system of sharing the wealth that oil generates with Alaskans in the form of annual permanent fund dividend checks and all the political fallout from that. Yet another side note, I have gotten every single PFD. This program has been around my entire life, and I find this podcast, Paying Dividends, fascinating. Maybe you will too. You can find both of those, Midnight Oil and Paying Dividends, wherever you get your podcasts. Which, can I just say, I hate saying that. Find our podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. It's like saying, find groceries wherever you get groceries. I mean, I get saying it on the radio or wherever else, but if you're listening to a podcast and you need to be told where to find podcasts, did you like get bumped on the head after you started listening and forgot how you got here? Anyway, that's enough. Remember to take care of your heads, people. Zach, Ben, and I, and Quince, whenever he's off the trail, we're all going to be doing some self-care as well. Those guys have had some long days, and after two straight weeks of getting up at 4 a.m., mostly for radio broadcast stuff, I don't mind saying this. This season of the Iditapod will be coming to an end soon. We all love doing this. Maybe, like you, it allows us to step away from some of the more discouraging news to focus on something different and special and inspiring for a lot of people. We got an email to iditarod@alaskapublic.org today from somebody hoping that we'd just keep on going. And Fitz, I wish we could, but there are other important stories to tell, like the ones Alaska's Energy Desk and the rest of us at Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Public Radio Network are telling. That said, at the end of the day, we are a public radio station. And just like your local station, we depend on contributions from our listeners. If you, say, end up at alaskapublic.org listening to this or reading our stories or looking at photos from the trail, We'd be just fine with you letting us and our already very supportive bosses know that you liked our work by contributing there. That is my shameless plug. So that's all the time we have for today, and maybe for a little while, to be honest. We'll keep you posted on whether there will be another episode for season 3. I've got a hunch we will be back for season 4. Find us on Twitter at AKPublicNews. Ben Matheson is simply at Ben Matheson, and Zach Hughes has the slightly more complicated at Zach Hughes AK. I am, of course, at KC Grove. As always, our theme music, it's by the band Sassafras. I'm going to try to learn that song, I think. We have more Iditarod race coverage at alaskapublic.org and knom.org. I'm your host, KC Grove, and we'll miss you all. But until next time, you know, happy trails.
How does it feel to come into this crowd?
Oh, it's great. Holy cow. It's always fun not only to come to Nome, but, I mean, there's so many people here, international folks from everywhere and sponsors and folks from everywhere. So to see the enthusiasm for what we do and our adventure, and the dogs are barking, that makes me nervous. I can't see them. It's really heartwarming, you know? It's like a homecoming every single time you get here, so... I'm happy to be here for a couple days, that's for sure. Dry my feet out, eat a little bit, drink some coffee, woohoo!
Was there a problem with your feet, or was it just, I mean...
They've just... She thinks it's, fungus. Don't tell anyone.
I think that would be good.
Super athlete's foot.
Yeah, from being wet all the time.
It seemed like you were kind of at the front breaking trail for a lot of people. Was there
any... It seemed that way to me, too.
Looking back on it, was there any place where you feel like your team caught a break?
No, but we make our breaks, whatever, you know? Bye, guys. I'll see you in a little while.
Ready?
They're jumping to go.
Hey.
They're still pretty happy. That's a little weird.
I was going to ask you to sing them all, pull out. You've been with these guys for 1,000 miles and how many days? How does it feel to end it? Watch them.
Well, it's not over yet. Here you go.
Thank you.
It'll never be over with me and dogs. I love dogs. I love sled dogs. I love Labrador Retrievers. I love all different kinds of dogs. So
I
those
just
guys
watching them go away after spending so much time.
All right, they won't. I'll go see him here pretty soon. As soon as I gotta go.
I was gonna ask you real quick about Jessie. She obviously had a really strong finish. She was here to welcome you.
Hello?
Hey, honey.
Hi.
Hey, I'm kind of sad that Iditapod's winding down.
Yeah, it's sad.
Hey, I wanted to ask you a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
What was your very favorite piece of tape from the Iditapod this year?
Oh, it's got to be that outtake from, I don't know, from the ceremonial start or... The restart or something episode.
Yeah,
it's doggies.
It's from the ceremonial start. I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
Here, I'm gonna play it.
What's your name?
Monica.
And are you having fun today?
Yeah.
What's your favorite part about all of this?
The doggies.
That's a good answer. What do you like about dogs?
Because they're so soft.
Also a good answer.
It's just the greatest thing ever.
It's so cute. She's not wrong. The dogs are the best part.
It's true. It's a good clip. Let's just go out on that. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay.
Goodbye, honey. I'll be home soon.
Okay. All right, bye.